Fieldcraft Survival presents Ranger TV with Mike and Kev.
Hey guys, it's Mike from Fieldcraft. Got Kev here from GB&T. We'd like to welcome you back to the second episode of Fieldcraft Presents Ranger TV. If you guys haven't noticed on social media and stuff, we just posted up the first episode and it's been pretty good so far. A lot of positive feedback, a couple of negative feedbacks that we quickly deleted. But it's good to be back here for the second episode. For guys and gals who don't know it, Ranger TV, the term Ranger TV, because I had a guy DM me and ask me why you call it Ranger TV when it's a podcast. Ranger TV is actually for a term that is used in Ranger school for staring at fires. So, you know, if you're staring at fires and you're in the wilderness, you know that the only entertainment you have is the high definition of a wildfire, or not a wildfire, but a fire that you make yourself. So it's the entertainment. So for the podcast, you're, you know, staring into oblivion.
Now, do summer ranger candidates,
They don't get fires.
No. You have to be
a winter ranger.
A winter ranger to really understand and appreciate what Ranger TV is, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Because ranger school, you have to, so you're authorized fires at certain periods so you don't become hypothermic and die.
Right.
And then the ranger instructors get in trouble. So you're authorized fires every once in a while. It was like a blue moon.
It was pretty cold in the mountains.
It was super cold. So right. We had fires every once in a while.
But we only carried one sleeping bag per squad, I think.
Yeah, one sleeping bag per squad. Like,
yeah, and you just a lot of man love.
Would pace. But in Ranger School, which is a combat leadership development school, where you're, you know, it's 70-ish days, 72 days, I think we went through.
I think so.
And they test you by basically depriving you of everything. I wouldn't say just food and sleep. It's more just like everything. You're deprived of everything.
Yes.
So no entertainment, no luxuries. You don't even have doors on the shitter.
Or dignity. Garrison. I was going to say.
Or dignity.
They take your dignity pretty quick, too.
So when you're in garrison, you're taking courses on small unit tactics, patrolling, planning. And remember, the shitter didn't have doors.
Because people would nap when they'd go.
Yeah, they'd fall asleep in the shitter because they'd lean up against the door.
Right.
So when you poop, you're literally pooping in on a toilet.
Next to your buddy.
But while your buddy is, like, guys are waiting for you, are staring at you, watching you wipe your butt.
You know what's disgusting?
Yeah.
In Florida, I'm sure you saw the same thing. You go into Florida, and all the stalls were down, all the toilets were exposed, and dudes were taking dumps while they were eating their hot dogs and Butterfingers from the dog axe. It was the grossest thing.
Oh.
I mean, I get it. Time management, got it. But dude, Ranger School was over.
Yeah.
Like, wash your hands before you eat.
So the dog axe is the last part of Ranger School, right? That's like the last thing. And we didn't have the Gator Lounge, which is famous in the last phase of...
It burned down.
Ranger School, it burned down. It's back. I went there a year or so ago, and it's freaking amazing.
Awesome.
But we didn't have that, it was just a guy selling hot dogs and RC Colas out of a cooler.
Yeah.
And they called it the Dog X. But it was better than nothing, because when you didn't have... Well, anyways, you don't have any food, so the course is broken up into three phases. I would say Fort Benning is like just
the worst,
this crappy.
That's Ranger School. That's what everyone expects. You're getting smoked. You're going through nasty obstacle courses and the water obstacle shit that we talked about last week. And that first portion, I think, just demoralizes and breaks you down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a crappy phase. But if you get out of that phase, you're all looking forward to going to mountains, cause it's like a vacation almost compared to actual Georgia. Or actual Fort Benning, Georgia.
Yeah, except for the run up Mount Yona.
Yeah, so they bus you, right? They bus you, or you jump in.
I jumped in. Did you jump in?
I didn't jump in. I was a leg.
Were you really? Ranger
School. Yeah,
dude. So, I had over 100 static line jumps. I was on jump status since 1994, right?
Uh-huh.
So I go to Ranger School. Had several jumps up, more than several. Been on jump status for a while. That to this day was the hardest. Worst landing of my military career. You guys had it so lucky. Dude, I hit the ground like a sack of shit.
So wait, you guys jumped into...
Florida.
No, mountains.
Oh, mountains. No. No, we did jump. Did we jump into mountains?
I think you jumped into every phase.
We did. Well, I was talking about Florida.
I don't know. For mountains, though...
I jumped into Florida. I don't remember if we did mountains.
I think we did. I remember mountains. We got off the bus, because we took the buses everywhere, but...
Yeah. Because you're a leg.
I know. Oh, I'm airborne now.
What was it like when you were a leg?
Oh, man, it was embarrassing.
Because I was never a leg.
I had an EIB, an expert infantryman's badge, with no airborne wings.
Yeah, that would be weird.
But you weren't eligible for that.
No, probably not.
Because you were a pogue. I had a penis. You're a pogue.
My penis came with a set of testicles.
My name's Kevin. I was an engineer.
Dude, I was clueless to the military when I came in. I thought everyone was John Rambo. Everyone was an airborne ranger. I was completely naive. And what's sad about that is the same lies and bullshit the recruiter sold me in '94. Mm-hmm. He was spouting the same bullshit. Not he, the same dude, but the recruiting guy was spouting the same bullshit to my son as he was enlisting for 11 Bravo. You know, it's just, I don't get it. Like, dude, just, especially the Army, it's just,
it's constant,
like,
right? It's Army. Recruiters have all these young guys and gals DMing me or messaging me and asking me for advice. And my first, I think it's sad advice is, hey, don't listen to recruiters.
I know. Well, and that's the thing, you know, and I think we both are familiar with the personalities. The guys that go kicking and screaming to recruiting command, those are the guys you want as your recruiter. The guys that are bitter, salty, and can't wait to get back to the line. I want that guy as a recruiter.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this back then, obviously.
You don't want the guy who's motivated. No. He's got like the recruiter
rings. The
dude
that changes his MOS to stay a recruiter.
Yeah, like career, what do they call it, career counselor?
Yes, dude. That what? Those are the dudes you need to avoid.
Who would ever be a career counselor?
Well.
that's like volunteering to say, I want to be in the Army to sell cars. Like,
exactly.
Especially
the Army. I mean, at least for me, the people I knew that were enlisting were people that wanted to enlist. You know, there wasn't any reason to lie or not be completely forthcoming with the information because, like, for me, dude, I thought the Army was going to be like Full Metal Jacket. I thought I was going to have a little drill sergeant trying to rape me every night. And it, even back in the
night. That kind of happened, though, right?
Well, it wasn't once a drill sergeant, but it was, you know, he said he was, so I let him, you know, get away with a little bit, but then I figured it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Anyways, that was a good night.
Summer of 95.
Yeah. Like it's Brian Adams' song waiting to be written.
Mm. Right on. So when, you know, when guys or gals, you go to join the military, and we're not really, we don't have really structured to this podcast. We've been accused by a couple of people of failing to have some kind of organization, but I don't think that's like a rule. I think somebody just made that up.
It is.
Like, I kind of just want to flow with it. It's better that way.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's as if, and here again, the definition for success.
Are we going to get on a tangent about that tangent?
We're going to get on a tangent about your soapbox because I like your soapbox and I want to make it bigger, right? Make it a soap podium.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know either, but it's bigger is always better. Right?
So they say.
Whatever. Average is also cool. Anyways, what were you saying?
Wow, you're so lost in the sauce right now.
I am, sorry.
All right, so.
Hey, but that reminds me.
Back to Ranger School.
Okay, go ahead. Then I have a funny story. Remind me of the funny story.
I will. And you'll forget by the time I remind you. All right, so Yona, we're kind of answering some questions that we got about, you know, some things that about Ranger School, about team life, and about survival. So to answer this person's questions about Ranger School, and Yona, when you hit mountain phase, you hit Mount Yona, and it's on, like, literally on Mount Yona.
Yeah.
And they drop you off in a bus, and it's cool because you're like, dude, this is a new phase. It's, like, pretty badass because it's the mountains. It's not humid. It's beautiful. And they get you off the bus, and you have your rucksack, and then they're like, let's go. And you're like, what? What do you mean, let's go? Yeah. And you look up, and there's a mountain in front of you, and you got to walk up the entire mountain. And dudes, I remember my ranger buddy was a lieutenant from, I know he was a Citadel guy, but dude, this dude was hurting. Yeah. I mean, we drug him up the mountain. I mean, he was screaming.
Yeah.
Wow, like screaming.
I don't know, because we weren't that broke down yet.
No, yeah. You're like walking up
after mountains, you're pretty broke down.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the terrain and the
Florida, time. Florida, dude, I was like, I couldn't even walk. Walking in the sand was like just a smoke fest.
No, but yeah, that was uncomfortable too.
Yeah, so mountain phase, you know, it's cool because you're in the mountains, but it's not because you're in Ranger School.
And especially not if it's January, February.
Yeah, that was painful.
Dude, that was miserable.
So we would get in the, I remember, you know how you get to a patrol base every night, and then you're getting all your stuff worked out, and the, there's somebody in a designated leadership position and they're getting graded. Mm-hmm. And dude, we used to get in the patrol base and I would just dig a foxhole all night. I'm like volunteering to dig people's holes because I'm like, I want to stay warm.
Yeah.
And it's dudes were just like clamming up and they would just suffer. And I'm like, I would rather work all night and be warm. Well, you were a Green Beret.
Maybe.
How was that being an SF dude showing up to ranger school?
It was...
Did you have a CIB already?
No.
Oh,
no,
you hadn't been to war yet.
That was before the war.
Yeah, it was before war. It was 99. 99,
yeah. No, honestly, it was the best thing I ever did for myself. You know, not necessarily the career, but for the team. You know, where before the war, you know, we would go to Africa, to different countries, and we would do joint training with the host nation soldiers. Special Forces tab, Green Beret, they didn't really give a shit about because they couldn't come to the United States to go through the training with us. However, at the time, the countries in Western Africa, a couple of them, they were able to send guys over for Ranger school.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
When they saw a Ranger tab, dude, it was like instant street cred. You could get up there and give the best, you know, block of instruction of your life on small unit tactics or ambushes or whatever, and they wouldn't listen. You get up there with a Ranger tab, and you start talking about, you know, the craziest shit you can think of, and those dudes were drinking it like it was
really
cool. Oh yeah,
so yeah. now foreign hosts like foreign nationals can come to the Q course.
Yeah, and I had a couple when I went through. Oh. I think, you know, and yeah, we have, what's right. Funny enough is I had a Venezuelan lieutenant as my he was in our squad during phase one, which was small unit tactics,
really,
for the Q course, and this is 97.
Was his name Vasquez?
Was it
really?
Yeah. Is that common in Venezuela?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It absolutely. Starts with a V and ends with a Z.
That's it. That's wow. It. Wow. Just made that up.
It was, though. Yeah, it's funny. Right on.
So in Ranger school, you go through the mountain phase, and then if you graduate, you went straight through, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were in the same class the whole time. And then you go to swamp phase, which is in Florida. And... by the time you get to Florida, you're just broken. I mean, just the sun hurts. I remember our first big patrol in the field problem, we had like four dudes become heat casualties.
Yeah, no, because it was such a drastic change.
It was.
And you only went, 200 miles south, maybe?
Oh, it was nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, because we were hitting upper 80s.
Yeah.
And during the daytime, but the movements were longer.
Yep. And they had, we were eating the long range patrol rations as well.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's a lesson learned in survival because, I mean, we call them gut bombs. An MRE is a gut bomb. But I remember before movement, we were going on a patrol, and I think I might have been I was in a leadership position. I can't remember which role I was. Mm-hmm. But we had a consolidated timeline, and we had to get out of the fire base because we had to meet the time.
Right.
And I think it was an ambush or raid or something. So we were breaking down the patrol base, about to bug out, and... everybody was crushing chow because they wanted to get food in them before we did the hit.
Yeah.
Well, the long-range patrol rations is dehydrated, right? Food.
Right.
Like, I remember one of the meals, like sweet and sour chicken, they're the best meals in, like, the MRE inventory. But, like, sweet and sour chicken, you added, like, an entire quart of water.
Right.
To this big chunk of, like, you know, of cardboard that turned into sweet and sour chicken.
Yeah, right.
And... so you add the quart of water and then you eat it. And the best thing about a LERP ration is you could like stow it and like put it in your pocket and go back to it later on.
Right.
It was amazing.
Theoretically. You able to do
that? I was able to do it because I would bag it out.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't last long. I mean, you couldn't put it in your cargo pocket.
I was eating 3 days of chow in one day every time we got a resupply. I couldn't manage my chow.
Oh, really?
Dude, I still have like my weatherproof notebook of shopping lists.
The grocery list, right?
Grocery list, trail mix recipes, all the different foods I was going to eat. Chow was my...
Me too, dude.
It was awful.
People think, so, and this is a lesson learned for, you know, the application of survival. When you're in Ranger school, you learn about a lot about yourself physically and mentally. But, you know, for guys, maybe, I think it was pretty much everybody across the board. Sleep is not an issue, right? Yeah. I think on average, a Ranger school student gets about 3.5 hours of sleep a night. You know, sometimes they give you like max 6 hours because they want you to do mountain climbing.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
So. But for the most part, I mean, you'll go days without sleep and then you'll be taking cat naps. But your body shuts down once you reach a certain point it doesn't even matter.
No.
You can't even, a blink turns into like a 2 minute nap.
Yeah. Like and you wake up walking.
Yeah. You wake up and you think you've been sleeping for like an hour.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes you have because right. you fell asleep in the patrol base.
PC?
So you'll have all this funny shit that happens. Like you'll be on a patrol at night. And so Ranger students got their night vision on that one, you know, PBS 14 in their eye, and the green just shuts them down.
Dude,
and yeah. you just immediately start droning, and you're doing the head bob, and then if you go on the in the prone, like your machine gun team, you're the only guys allowed to go on the prone.
Dude, that's the most
which is dangerous
position though. That your yeah. chin is perfectly balanced on the machine stock gun. Of the machine gun,
dude.
And dude, you sleep so
it's
good.
It's like there. A therapeutic mattress
because you look like you're awake.
Yeah,
you thread your finger up there and you lean your hand over the
and your PC, your patrol cap covers your eyes.
Way down, dude, and it looks like oh man, this dude switched on. He's pulling security.
Until the ranger instructor wakes you up and he's standing in front of you and he's been standing in front of you for
and
like
then
5 minutes.
And you argue that you weren't sleeping.
Yeah.
That's the best.
I just nodded off, Sergeant.
Yeah, right.
yeah, we've had, like, I don't know, man. It was a big dream. But ranger school's last phase, you're kind of doing like maritime stuff.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit, right? There were some groups that did a lot more. Our element, our platoon, didn't do a lot of amphibious stuff.
I think for us, though, too, it was, within the school, though, yeah.
Yeah.
No, the swamp, I know, remember in the swamps, the water levels were a little low?
Yeah,
and because
yeah.
it was a winter course, dude, they were only a couple of years after
the
you know,
students
they had
got
a couple
killed.
Students got killed, so they were still kind of feeling out. Like
they got killed in Florida, right?
Yeah.
Hypothermia.
Right. Yeah, correct. And especially with us being winter course, you know, if you think about it, that was like 3-4 years after that incident.
Yeah, they didn't take any chances.
So I'm not going to say they were gun shy, but yeah, they were taking all the appropriate precautions during that time of year being in the water. And I think we missed out on training events, but not training value, to be fair to the program itself. Because again, dude, like, not even because it's Ranger School and it gave me a tab or any of that bullshit. Dude, that was the best training I received.
You know you wanted that tab.
I didn't know what that tab was.
So once you got the tab, I know you went to the PX and you walked,
dude,
like,
dude.
Your left shoulder led you through doors.
Well, hell yeah. It's pretty cool, man.
Like when you checked out,
I was like, oh, excuse
you're
me.
Buying beer at
this in the way.
Closed yeah. cells. You're like, oh, excuse me, my
yeah,
shoulder
right.
leads the way.
They got us back, man. They're like, that shit looks too cool. You can't take it off their uniform, but let's change our dress uniforms and take all that shit away.
Oh, man.
Dude, anyway, it's just so yeah, yeah. Yes. No, but it was, you know, honestly, though, so that was, we graduated in what, 2000, right?
Yeah.
So you figure, literally, year and a half, 2 years later, 2 years later. To be on the safe side, dude, everything I learned in Ranger School, I put into real world play over in Afghanistan to include patrol based activities. Back then, you know, 3rd Battalion came in, they had Anaconda. When 2nd Battalion became part of the fight, we had Noble Venture. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, I don't even know what task force number they're up to, but I think back then it was like Task Force 10 or something like that. But it was, you know, a combined event. Pushing up the Mangrete Valley into the, you know, Burmel and Hindu,
mm-hmm.
and just bouncing from madrasa to madrasa, just a movement to contact.
Really?
Yeah, and it was amazing, dude. And you name it, like, as far as enablers, we had it. But no shit, there we were, patrol-based activities every night, fire and maneuvering, you know, platoon-sized elements going through the valley. It was pretty cool.
Man, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, it was fun.
So I just had a guy on my Instagram, like an Instagram buddy. You know, I've been mentoring this guy for, I say mentoring, it's like it's a big deal. I haven't really been, you know, I've been giving him advice. And he joined the 18 X-ray program as a, you know, brand new out of college, some life experience, but
right.
pretty switch on guy. He's got his bachelor's in, I think, philosophy? Nah, not philosophy. I can't remember. Sorry if I hacked
Poland.
Up. Poland. In Poland. New Zealand. Eastern Bloc.
It's close, man.
It's close.
It's Eastern Samsonite. Someone, dude.
No, this guy got out of college and wanted the service country, and he kind of followed me in the beginning. And I haven't been on social media that long, but he joined the 18 X-ray program and succeeded at Fort Benning for 11 Bravo, which is infantryman. And then he went through airborne school, and then he went through the special operations preparation course,
yeah.
SOPC.
They hook those kids up, man.
Oh, they do. They go through a good program.
Phenomenal
they
program.
Do.
They're in like the 90 percentile.
Oh, yeah.
As far as, and it's no bullshit. They're sending savages through the Q course.
Oh, yeah. This dude's a stud, man. He just got through and he got selected, I think, today or yesterday.
Awesome. Good for him.
Yeah, just got through selection. He's like, oh, yeah, just got through. It was easy day. And I'm like, what? And I remember, culminating ranger school. We digressed to selection, but culminating ranger school, I remember that last road march we did, right? They trick you, you know. We're gonna get the vehicles and get picked up and move back, and then they're like, "Oh, the convoy got hit. Sorry, you got to walk back." So we started walking, and I remember this West Point dude. He was a good dude. I can't knock him because he was a real good dude. He just kind of bitched out at the end a little bit because his feet hurt. And he was like, "Oh, my feet." So they're like, "Get on the vehicle," and he's like, "I'm not getting on the vehicle. There's no way."
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. Yeah, they told me to get on the vehicle. I'm like, hell no. Because everybody knew that's kind of like, you're done.
Yeah, you quit.
You quit, yeah. And so he wouldn't. And then finally they're like, no, seriously, you're a go. You're good. You just need to get on the vehicle.
I wouldn't believe him.
Yeah, I wouldn't believe him either. No way.
No, especially at that point.
Wow. Yeah, never. But I remember they dispersed his equipment, his ruck. So remember Joe, the 7th group, he became a warrant, but 7th group dude.
Yeah.
Big dude,
right?
Joe.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I can't remember his last name.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, Joe. Yeah. He's like in the graduation picture.
Right? Yeah, right on.
Joe took his ruck, and I took his 240.
Mm-hmm.
So it was awesome because I had a saw, and then nobody wanted to get his 240, so I'm like, I'll take it. So I was front heavy. Somebody had his 126.
So you had the saw and a
240? The 240. Absolutely. Ooh. Well, nobody would do it because it was like in the middle of we're moving.
Oh, okay.
And I was just right there and nobody's like paying attention.
Yeah.
And then finally I'm like, whatever, I'll take it. So me and Joe are rotating a ruck and a 240 between us.
Right. Jesus.
Which either way you look at it, it's just painful.
Right.
And dude, I remember I tripped. And if you ever trip in ranger school, it's almost like a nap opportunity.
Oh, dude.
So... But I had the 240, and the barrel was, you know, I was 19 at the time, so I wasn't that big. But the barrel's just huge, and it's strapped across my neck, and the saw's, like, coming down my leg.
Mm.
And so when I fell, there was no saving me, so I just committed to falling.
Right.
And I'm like, let me get as much sleep as I can on the way down.
Right.
And then the barrel hits the road. I'm surprised you don't remember this. And it goes, and just leaves this big screech mark. And across the street, and I smashed the ground. And it sounds like a friggin' GMV rolled on the concrete. That's dude. Awesome. And the RI turns around, and it looks like I explode when I hit the ground.
Right,
it's just
right.
Like, boom! And I just lay there. I don't move, like, lifeless. I'm like, let me just get a nap out of this. So I just lay there, and the RI runs up, and he's like, dude, are you good?
Yeah.
I thought you just died.
Jesus Christ.
And he actually was helpful. He was, like, trying to help me out.
Right, right.
But he helped me up, and then we did that long haul back. And isn't it, it's kind of scary waiting to hear if you're go or no-go.
It is. It is. You know, for me in Florida, I was first up, out the door, right?
For patrols.
Yeah. Day zero was my graded position as we're rolling out.
Really?
And, dude, that was my only position.
And then you're nugged the rest of the time.
Oh, dude, it was so hard. Like, I went from hero to almost, like, zero.
Oh, yeah.
As far as peers, man, I just couldn't keep it together.
Though. Yeah.
You know, and I went from, like, being a part of the headquarters package, being involved, you know.
To becoming this turd.
To becoming, like, I just want to sleep, you know, like, leave me alone. Like, I mean, seriously, like, bitching about digging a fighting position. The same thing that kept us alive,
yeah.
What, 2 weeks earlier, I now am just, like, completely defiant about.
See, that's a good observation because... When you're in a position of leadership in ranger school, you're aware.
Right.
You're focused. It's like, it's almost like a cortisol dump, right? There's like kind of adrenaline because you're being watched.
Yeah.
And you're being graded. And it's you're motivated by the sheer fact that if you don't pass, you're going to be recycled.
Jesus.
And, and it's going to be another cycle of misery.
Right.
So there's some incentive, but... When you become a Joe and you have no responsibilities, you're a subordinate, you start feeling sorry for yourself.
Yeah.
You get weaker.
Right. Well, it's harder to find the motivation because 100% of the motivation has to be yours. You know, you're still obligated to your guys, to the team.
You're trying.
You're trying. But again, because that's where Ranger School, I'm not going to say comes up short, but what they try to replicate is the combat stress, right?
Yeah.
And they do that by depriving you of sleep and chow and putting you into these scenarios that are just ridiculous as far as like the time constraints and limits, right? But that's as an evaluated leader. Once you're, like you said, once you have that spotlight off you, the pressure's gone. And now you need that pull from 100% you to be able to react and respond appropriately to support your guys, even though no one's watching you. Just natural urges and responses to extreme fatigue.
I remember that dude, and I don't know if he's still in the military, so I'll say his last name. I don't give a shit, but his last name is Simpernosnik. Remember Simpernosnik?
I do.
Ranger Simpernosnik. I think it was from First Bat.
Why do I know his name, though?
Well, he was kind of a turd in Ranger
School. Dude, I think that's the guy that stole my knife.
Well, he's the guy. He was a tall, goofy kid.
Like skinny with bad skin.
Yes.
Motherfucker.
That's him.
He stole my chow and my knife.
Dude. Simpernosnik. That's him. He's kind of like reddish.
Looks like a little potty marks.
Yeah. He looks like a little turd.
Yeah.
And he's the guy who I was PL or squad leader, weapon squad leader, or something like that. And I told him he rucksack flopped.
Yeah.
And I say, hey, dude, you need to be on a knee. Like, get up. You're going to screw me, you know? And he's like, no, I'm not getting up. And I said, well, you're not going to get up? Like, what's happening right now? And he's like, no, I'm not getting up. And everybody heard him. It was like, you piece of shit. And they peered him and did all this stuff. Well, maybe 2 nights later, this dude was in a leadership position.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like the RTO or, you know, the FO or something.
Right.
And he told me to get up. And he didn't know who it was. He's like, hey, get up. And I knew it was him. And I just didn't get up. And I didn't move. I just rebelled. And he came up to me. He's like, get up. You're screwing me. I looked at him and said, payback's a bitch, son.
Yeah, no shit. Fucking chow thief, man.
Chow thief.
That was him.
Sipper nosy. If you're listening to this.
Find him.
DM us.
Bring me him. Motherfucker, dude.
We had
a break in contact with him. He was like a, you know, Bravo right rifleman.
That's right.
Team leader or something.
We left him and his guy, right? His buddy.
Well, yeah, we took a knee, but we were three or four deep.
Yeah, yeah.
But what was funny about it, so, you know, we take a knee face out, it was a short halt. And next thing you know, I think we all kind of zonked for that brief second you were explaining. And dude, Simpernosnik was in the lead, and he's like, where are we? Chambers around and goes into lost ranger procedures, fires off 3 fucking rounds, and the lead element was maybe 20 feet in front of us.
Really?
It was hilarious.
Did he get in trouble? He didn't get kicked off of that?
No. He
graduated with us.
He did.
That's crazy, dude.
What can you do?
All right, let's go in the news, man. Today there's some crazy things going on, right? We got this airliner that flew out of Paris,
mm-hmm.
to Cairo. And apparently now they're calling it a potential terrorism. It had how many air marshals on it?
Dude, it had like three marshals on it.
How does that happen?
I don't know. Good question. I mean, it's one of those things too, though. I mean, this story's going to change 3 times before we ever see the truth.
So what would be the motive? Paris?
Exactly.
Because, I mean, I think you'd want to hit a plane.
Going into Paris. No,
yeah.
I mean, this is where I call bullshit. And we shouldn't be speculating that it was a terrorist attack. We should have known it was a terrorist attack. We should have known that a terrorist organization were making demands while this was in mid-flight. The media's play in it is extremely irresponsible.
Well, yeah. I know, like San Bernardino, when that couple, you know, who decided to get their jihad on and then wind up killing a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
They were hesitant to call them terrorists at first.
Well, because they were Middle Eastern.
I know some people were thinking that potentially what they're called doesn't matter, but it absolutely, when you work in operations or developing intelligence or developing policy to go after bad guys, it matters because terms translate to legal jargon, which determines whether or not you're going to be able to do certain things to go after these people. And it absolutely defines, on the legal side, how they're going to be prosecuted.
Why are we worried about accommodating a culture that wants to push our culture out?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that we need to be belligerent.
But why not? Well, let's say it is a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
3 dudes are air marshals.
Yeah.
And I got my federal firearms instruction qualification through a course that I took with the federal government. and we had to shoot all the quals. Mm-hmm. And I remember the air marshal qual, the pistol qual, is tough. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty hard. And these guys are really trained at doing their job. But can you imagine? I mean, when you think about complacency.
It's your time to shine. That's all you train for.
That's it.
That's your
game. That's your war, right? That's your combat. Ready. And you're not ready.
What the fuck?
Well, can you imagine how, I mean, think about it. You're 9 to 5.
Yeah.
You're 9 to 9 or however many hours these guys are doing this. Get on a bird, read your magazine, dude, and fly.
Yeah. Right. And in the meantime, all you have to do is train. If you're at the range, you're working.
You're getting
paid to live a Spartan type lifestyle.
Yeah. Your ultimate job is to shoot a dude in the face when the time comes.
And there's no second option to it. The second option is exactly what's unfolding. You know, a down bird in the middle of nowhere. But three marshals, if that is accurate.
Was it a French plane?
I believe so, yeah. So
French carrier?
I think we need to be specific. They're not U.S. marshals.
Yeah. We're not talking U.S. marshals.
Their equivalent. Their equivalent.
Well, and I know, and this is just, you know, hell, last year I flew to 4 different countries working and flying through all these different countries. Security is so laxed.
Yeah.
In all these different countries, and they don't have the same technology and the same buttholes at TSA checkpoints that just like to harass people for shit. Some people hate, you know, I don't necessarily hate on the TSA because they have a job to do, right? I mean, they're Americans just like we are. They have a job. Yeah, they cannot be assholes when we go through checkpoints, but I mean, there's no doubt it's made us safer.
We created it.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I mean, just look back on why it was created. And I agree with you. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just some people trying to do their job. What I do disagree with, though, is the fact that they wear a badge, that they have no authority over anyone or anything at that point. It's automatic conflict.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I remember as a contractor, I used to fly to these shitholes. And for this one, it was last year or the year before last, I was flying to this one country. That's, you know, it's all in the news because all the crappy stuff that happens there. But I was on this watch list where you get like, I think it's 5s or 6s. It's like a 4 different numbers.
Okay.
That every time you go to get checked in, you get scanned and the airport codes you to get pulled into secondary to get searched.
Yeah.
So every time I flew CONUS, I would.
Stateside.
I would get tagged for being that guy. The Asian terrorist
looking dude. You look like Genghis Khan.
Dude. Well, what's funny is I was flying to Texas to do a drill. And, you know, for guys that don't know, I used to be an operations sergeant major in Texas for the National Guard. And this is just last year. And I was flying into Texas and I think I was coming from Virginia. And the guys in Virginia, I put my uniform, my ACUs in my carry-on because I didn't want to fold them up and stuff them in a check bag. And I got pulled into secondary, got the little codes, and all these guys swarm me, and they're going through all my stuff, asking me questions. And I have a military ID, you know, sergeant major military ID, and I have a government ID.
Right.
And then they open up the bag, and my ACU uniform is on top.
Right.
And, you know, I've got an SF tab, Ranger tab, and they see it, and they kind of, like, look at it. He looks at the front of it, and he's like, "Where'd you get the uniform?"
Jesus.
And I'm like,
eBay.
Really, bro? Well, I see you have facial hair and you're in the military. So where'd you get the uniform? Jesus. And I'm like, well, I don't know, dude. I bought it from Military Clothing and Sales.
Yeah.
And he was just being a real rude butthole.
Yeah.
They got a job though, but I mean, you have to use common sense, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And you have to be personable regardless of whatever stress levels you take with. I mean, and again, just to put it in comparison, us in Afghanistan, us in Iraq.
Yeah.
Dude, it's a smile on your face and a finger on the trigger. You know what I'm saying? To where we're used to operating in population-centric environments. We're not treating everyone like a dirtbag. We're not treating everyone like shit.
Yeah.
You know, we direct that at the appropriate audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it holds true in everything we do in life. To where, dude, just take it as it comes. Treat the individual as the individual deserves to be treated. You know?
Yeah.
Sounds easy.
No, it's like, just don't...
Don't be an asshole.
Yeah, don't be a butthole, man. Yeah,
dude, I get it. You had a bad day. So did I.
So, yeah, that plane crash, you know...
Can you say that again?
The cockpit was compromised.
So cool.
It was compromised and it
did
starts
it have a rash?
It did have a rash.
Okay, sorry. Okay. This isn't a joke.
This isn't a joke. I mean, people died in this plane crash.
You know, include three of their marshals.
Three of the marshals. That's what's disappointing.
Right. No, exactly.
But you don't even know. We don't even know, France's protocols. I mean, these guys could be armed with tasers. It's France.
Yeah.
I mean, the only hard dicks out of France are the GIGN and the French Foreign Legion.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will tell you that the French, to give them credit, when I was in Africa begging to do operations that included saving Americans, the French were flying over us, headed into Mali to do halo operations to hit terrorist safe havens.
No shit.
Yeah, they did that when Mali couped.
Awesome.
And they started laying waste. So, you know, kudos to bone. It's good in French. I don't know if you know that.
That's a big word, Michael.
Bone. My French teacher.
That goes well with.
Oh, yeah.
What was that other thing?
Cockpits.
Ah!
Bone. Well, anyways, in the. In language school, I used to piss off Madame Pascal. Madame Pascal.
Yeah.
I used to piss her off because she would say, Mabi, how do you say, how are you? Je m'appelle-vous? Or
comment se va?
Comment se va, yeah. And I would be like, bone. Just bone. I'm bone. And so I'd mix this English with the French, and she hated me for it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It was entertainment.
So, je suis fatigué?
Je suis fatigué.
I'm tired, right?
Right now.
So my instructor would ask me, how do you say, like, what's wrong with you or what's going on? I think the same.
Comment
ça va, right?
Yeah, comment ça va.
Je suis fat and gay. She didn't like that. I got a kick out of it.
Yeah, that totally.
As long as you think it's funny, it's okay.
If you're funny in your own head,
yes.
That's all that matters.
It's not about their feelings. It's about your feelings.
It's about your feelings.
Remember.
Yeah, remember.
Smile on the outside.
That's it. So, also, I read the news, and we can't find the story.
I know.
My mom texted me this morning about
it. Are you pulling a Bobby Boucher on us?
No.
Because your mama told you it's true, yeah?
Mama.
Are you going to tell us about mutant alligators?
No, it's true. So, this guy gets lost on a hike somewhere in California.
Yeah.
And he uses his, duct tape to spell out help. And they, you know, from the helicopter, they spot.
Help him learn to read a map?
Help him. Yeah, yeah.
How do you get lost?
Dude, I don't know. In this day and age,
yeah,
like you started somewhere in civilization walked to
this day and age is the problem. Like you and I learned how to read maps before the army.
Yeah.
And then in the army, we again built on that basic skill set.
Yeah.
Dude, anymore.
Map reading volume 3 gets selected. I just don't know.
Oh, right on. Yeah. All over. Dude, all they get is a GPS. All they learn how to do is turn on their watch.
That's it.
Turn on their GPS. What happened? I mean, and again, at least they have solar panels that they can take with them nowadays. But before, I mean, their only contingency, and this is the younger of us in America, was an extra set of batteries. You know, like, but for us, you know, it's at a minimum a rule of three as far as our primary, alternate, and then a contingency as far as I'm going to have a compass, and then I might have a wrist compass, but my contingency, my emergency, is always a GPS.
Always the GPS.
That's it. Everything goes to shit. I got to power that thing up and get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
But it's a last resort, not
absolutely
my primary.
Yeah. So land navigation, you know, we get asked all the time, like, how can I get better at land nav? Well, the only way to get better at land nav is got to do it.
Yeah. And get yourself lost in the woods and bring duct tape to spell help.
That's it.
You know? Just do it a couple times.
That's all you need.
I don't know. No, but seriously, it's really frustrating. And, you know, it's one of those things.
Are you that frustrated, though?
I am, because, dude,
I sense your frustration.
It shouldn't take $1,000 for a dude to go out in the woods and feel comfortable.
Yeah.
It's turned into this elitist event to where if you're not spending, you know, $600 on a jacket or $200 on a set of kicks, you don't belong out there.
You know, people, for the most part, unless they grow, like you said it in last episode, the more and more we get more drawn to epicenters for technology and work and everything else in these urban environments, the less we're in touch with nature and hunting and fishing and things that we grew up in. You know, I grew up playing with paper towel rolls turned into guns in my grandma's backyard, which was like a jungle.
Yeah.
But that was my little world of outdoor.
Were you Braddock activity. Or were you the prison guard?
Well, I was someone from the A-team.
That's awesome.
Someone from the A-Team. I can't. I was. What's the guy? Face.
I was always Murdoch.
You were always Murdoch, the clown. He was. I could see that.
Yeah, I'm kind of crazy.
You know, it's harder for people to get in touch with the outdoors and to learn.
Right.
I mean, they don't teach it. I mean, unless you're like glued to YouTube and you're believing what you're seeing, there's not a lot of academia and scholarly kind of people teaching principles of survival.
Considering an outdoor survivalist is not recognized as a job, there are no established qualifications.
Isn't that crazy?
It is.
Well, it's good for us.
Because I can be anything I want.
We need to define that.
We do. We need to establish the standard.
You know, I got a text from my buddy Ted, and Ted's a federal agent, and he works for the Forestry Department. Is that right? Forestry Department.
I think
Department of Forestry? I don't know.
Department of Trees.
Yeah, Department of Trees. The tree department.
He works at the Christmas tree lot.
He sells Christmas trees for the federal government.
This is close to federal service.
Tim. His name's Tim.
We like to elaborate.
Yeah, Tim. Tim from the tree, Charlie Brown Tree Factory Company. Well, anyways, this...
So huge lot.
He's a good buddy of mine. And, you know, he was telling me this morning, he's like, hey, man, you know, I know you know this, but, you know, you guys are doing the mindset thing. You're teaching mindset.
Yeah.
And nobody's really doing that. And, you know, people teach kind of like philosophy of mindset. They can give you a whole bunch of impractical information that really doesn't have any tangible, you know, executable qualifications to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what we want.
Absolutely.
We want to give people, like, I want to give people solutions. I'm tired of people talking about, well, here's my theory about tactical M4 carbine.
Yeah.
And here's a, you know, hour, 20-minute DVD that you pay $200 for to hear some dude who's I'm not going to go this. I'm not going to even go there.
Which one? Was it
Sergeant? Yeah, I don't know what you're doing.
Sergeant Major Bush.
No, yeah, Sergeant Major Bush.
Thank you for your service.
You again. No, I just, I don't want to put out philosophy, dude. I want to put out something that's executable. Somebody, a tool that somebody could take.
But it needs philosophy.
Well, you frame it in philosophy, right?
And so, understand. But again, without the practical exercise, without the time on the ground, it's just chatter. So what we're saying is, hey, enough talk. Here's a solution.
Exactly.
It's not, survival's not a theory. It's a fucking science.
Yeah.
And let's match the hard skills with the soft skills.
Let's practically execute it.
But with that, with this acceptance of that, again, it goes into, hey, we don't need Bear Grylls squeezing, you know, water out of elephant shit, showing everyone how to get dysentery. You know what I'm saying? We need responsible individuals out there that are truly driven by providing mentorship.
Dude, survival was the best genre on the planet.
We all want to live, but we're all dying.
Absolutely.
Right?
People die for dumb shit.
Let me live a little bit more comfortably for another day, and I'll be happy.
God. Okay, so let's go on the book of the day, because this ties up right into what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And for people don't know, you know, we're going to do bios next episode, and also have a Memorial Day special for a couple war stories about good buddies of ours that we lost. But for those that don't know, Kevin is a big marathon type, you know, endurance kind of athlete. And he's taken for being so fat as he is, he's taken some considerable passion into that.
I'm taking some drugs to make me skinny because you make me insecure.
Hey, it's cool, man.
Asshole.
Whatever makes you better.
I got cheeks. Just because I have chubby cheeks doesn't mean
that's true.
Dude, I will get naked right now.
You have a long upper torso. Short
I
legs.
Do. I'm an optical illusion.
Yeah, optical illusion. So the book that you recommend is called Relentless Forward Progress. Relentless Forward Progress. And it's a guide to running ultra marathons by Brian Powell. So it's Brian, B-R-Y-O-N, Powell, P-O-W-E-L-L. Tell us about this book, man.
So, you know, you can find it on their website, irunfar.com. And basically, Relentless Forward Progression is a book I picked up as I was thinking about bridging the gap between marathon running and ultra marathons. You know, I came to the realization, and let me just put it out there, man, is I'm not racing. I'm a participant who's highly competitive with himself. Right,
yeah.
I do it for the t-shirts.
Yeah.
You know, but with that being said, I enjoy it. I enjoy the suffering that comes with running. I enjoy the isolation, the internal dialogue, the workout, you know, demons and all this good shit. A lot of good comes from
running. It's therapy.
It is. And again, coming from a very busy household with six children, it's a huge escape at the same time. It's uninterrupted.
Keeps you balanced.
Positive thought. All the good stuff. But anyway, so it's a quantum leap if you think about it. You know, you can kind of taper it off a little bit because by definition, an ultramarathon is anything greater than 26.2 miles. You know, so I could have started with a 50-kilometer race or something, but I went with a 50-miler because my end state is to do a 100-miler.
So you already done 50 miles?
I have. I've done several. I think maybe 10.
Really?
10-ish. Yeah.
How? So when I think about running or doing anything that involves 50 miles, I don't want to do it.
Even driving 50 miles is a pain.
It's annoying.
I know.
So,
but I look forward to these ones.
Can you sleep 50 miles? Is that possible?
Can I what?
Can you sleep 50 miles?
Dude, I'm in the spirit world when I'm out there, man. It's,
really?
Oh, dude. It's
because you're on autopilot,
you're,
right?
You're transcending from universe to freaking universe. It's pretty wild.
So tell me about the nutritional curve. Because, you know, people, we talked about it before. When you're running, you have to feel your body.
Absolutely.
And I remember seeing my squad leader in the infantry and going, why are you eating a Snickers bar before you take a PT test? And then everybody's like laughing at him like he's crazy.
Right.
Well, he was the smart one back in the 90s because he was getting the sugar, the carbohydrates that he needed immediately as fuel.
Yeah.
So how do you feel for a 50-mile race?
Exactly that. You know, it's our ritual because when I say we, I'm running it, but it's a family event.
Yeah.
We all go. We turn it into a weekend away for everyone. We either, you know, camp at the race site or stay somewhere local. But anyways, when we head out there, we'll go out the night prior and I have no more than four beers, a big pizza. And that's my nightly ritual, right? We get up the next day, we start running when it's dark out and, you know, light breakfast, high carbs. And then on the way, what I'm personally doing is I'm consuming at a minimum 400 calories every hour.
And that's, so it's an excuse for you to eat a lot.
Just constantly. That's why, I mean, that's another reason why I run. It just justifies the bullshit, you know, caloric intake throughout my day. You know, if I don't have to worry about what I eat.
400 calories an hour?
An hour. That's what I go for.
How are you putting this calorie
initially,
in?
Initially, you know, just through kind of trial and error, I was doing goos and a lot of the, you know, just the sports.
They're hard to stomach, though, after a long period.
Awful. Yeah. Awful. You know, by mile 20, 30, I was just exploding, and it was a rough day. What I did is I took advantage of...
Exploding like shit in your pants.
Yeah, I was pooping my pants. It was horrible.
Yeah, because for people who don't know, like sugars, like goos, and even power bars.
Oh, the levels of potassium and sodium. Yeah, it's body just so much. What we don't need absolutely. Like that. It's all about the absorption. It
causes
right?
a lot of stomach issues, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and, you know...
So what works? The way,
what works is... what I was able to do is basically cherry pick off our nutritionist at Third Special Forces Group.
Yeah.
And she set me up with an amazing plan.
They're awesome,
to include, you know, level of hydration that I need to maintain and sustain throughout. Dude, when I stuck with her plan, and again, I'm not winning the Boston Marathon or anything like that, but I'm talking, dude, her nutritional plan shaved hours off of my end time.
Really?
It was amazing. But it's just eating whole, real food throughout. You're just eating good. You hit the points where you have to drink the flat soda, you have to eat the handful of M&Ms, but at the same, it's exactly what you said. It's that sugar rush, that energy, just kind of.
Are you using simple carbohydrates or is that complex?
Like, dude, I don't know anything like that.
Yeah,
I misspell a lot of like easy words.
Because I know you want to keep your glycemic levels.
Yeah, see, that's Mr. Wizard shit, man. I just run.
But I mean, to that point of your lack of knowledge.
Yeah, thanks.
You could literally fill your body with garbage, and it's fuel that's burned.
At that point, a calorie is a calorie.
A calorie is a calorie, right?
Yeah,
pizza, I know. Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Who's the ultra marathoner?
Which one, ours?
Yeah, no. The guy, it's literally the book's called like
Marathon Man. That's Dean Karnassus.
Yeah, yeah. And he just eats pizzas and all this crap.
It's a good book, though. It's awesome. Yeah,
it's
so
awesome
he's talking about how he calls in for a large pie on his run.
On his runs?
But dude, it's like that, though, because... These races, and to their credit, every race I did, every ultra that I've done, the race directors go all out, dude. Like, I'm talking, it's a smorgasbord.
No way, dude.
And it's timed perfectly. You know, like, the distance and the time between the safety checks are appropriate to the terrain. So sometimes they're closer, and sometimes they're stretched out, but it's appropriate to the terrain. But, dude, when you get there, it's a full spread, you know, and, like, no one's skimping on the mixed nuts and the candy and
all
burgers,
the good stuff,
and you know, like for 50 milers in particular, you know, a couple of them at the midpoint would have like cheeseburgers and hot dogs and all the other junk too.
So you can get it. More information on this book at irunfar.com, and I'm sure that's...
Yeah, so, I'm sorry, but dude, yeah, it goes into, when you get into their stories of other ultramarathoners, and the thing is with an ultramarathoner, dude, the mindset applies to any type of significant emotional event in your life. You know, again, this book can be beneficial for the runner, for the non-runner. I don't know the people who wrote it. I don't know the people who run the company. I just genuinely think it's an amazing
good information.
Book. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. So, we're going to head and end this episode.
Write a funny story.
But with that funny story, that's how we end it.
It would be another episode.
Why? Is it a long, funny story?
No, it's a funny story, but it goes into like TBI shit where, dude, so I was driving out of here this morning and I'm talking to Quinn.
Quinn's his son.
So he's one of my boys. So I'm talking to my son. They're in the back seat because I'm taking them to school.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I get to Sacramento and I'm like, huh, why isn't Quinn in school? Oh, shit.
He's in your back.
He's in the back. He's in my back seat.
Dude, you have some serious
issues. And I'm talking to him and I'm like, I'm recognizing that the situation's wrong, that my son should be in school, but I wasn't able to place it together.
Did you just black out?
Sacramento. No, I was just kind of, you know.
Somebody in social services is going to call.
No, it wasn't like that.
This didn't happen. This was just fiction, guys. This didn't
happen.
Crank call.
It doesn't sound that bad, does it? It's not like I was sleeping at the wheel.
Well, you woke up, technically.
Not woke up. I just forgot I was taking him to school. Holy shit.
You went to the gym and you left the windows up and you came back in.
Oh, motherfucker. Like, no. No. I'm a very responsible
person. You are. No, so you're the best
I've
ever seen.
But seriously, it's one of those things, and it's frustrating. Because I think any guy that's been bumped on the noggin or been one too many breaches can say that, dude, something's off.
Yeah.
And it's almost like we see it coming, these gaps and these shortages, but we can't prevent it. And it's extremely frustrating.
You know what I did the other day? I was like, Lynn said something, and she's like, what did you, you were going to tell me something. I said, oh, yeah. You know, I wanted to tell you like that two times this morning, I had incidences where I did something real crazy, and I remembered it was crazy, and I was like, why am I doing this? She goes, what was it? And I was like, I don't remember what they were. Dude. But I remember at the time, I went, wow, this is real crazy, and I shouldn't be doing this. Like, I know for a fact I've done this twice this last week, but I make a smoothie every morning with kale and protein powder and milk, and I took it out, the milk, and I put it, set it down, and I poured it inside the little blender, and I took out the protein powder, put two scoops in the blender, and then I put the protein powder back in the fridge, and then, like, put the milk back where the protein was. I'm like, how do you, one's milk and one's protein powder?
I already forgot what we were talking about.
Where am I?
I don't know.
Hey, so we'd like to welcome you to the podcast. This is Mike.
Are we starting or ending?
No, we're ending. We're ending right now. All right, guys. So, hey, thanks for joining us for this episode. You know, the awesome thing about Kevin being my next-door neighbor is that he can come over and we can basically do these a lot. And we like to do it more often. We got a line of good guests coming up that leading into the subject matter expert and survival thing that will only benefit you guys and benefit us, really. We're interested in the subject matters that we're talking about. So we look forward to having another episode. I think next episode, we're going to have one more episode leading up to a Memorial Day episode.
Absolutely.
And then we'll have a special where we talk about some important men who've played important roles in our lives. But you know, thanks for listening again. You guys can catch us on philcraftsurvival.com. Or you can check us on our social media handles. I'm on at Soft Survivor on Instagram, SOF Survivor. And Kev, where are you at?
I'm at Soft Runner, SOF Runner.
Yep. And you have you don't have GBNT Facebook set up yet?
No, not yet. You know,
but soon.
It's coming.
You can catch me on Philcraft LLC on Facebook, and just know that we're on iTunes now. And it's for ranking so we can access more listeners. It's important for people to leave reviews. So if you guys like what you're hearing and you got good input, leave us a review. If you have anything bad to say, just go away. Just quietly and don't say a word.
Please. Yeah, it's your choice to listen.
Yeah. Yeah. If you leave a bad review, we'll just kind of track you down and then we'll say something to you.
We'll find you.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time.
Hey, with that being said, solutions. Provide us solutions, guys. User feedback. We will flex to accommodate.
All right, later, guys.
Bye.